Who is going to be the guest next Tuesday?
The esteemable Norio Kushi.
That guy seems fun. He's totally loopy.
Yeah, I think he'll be fun.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. He's a professional long-haul truck driver, 18-wheeler kind of guy.
Hmm.
He's the son of a macrobiotic celebrity, now since deceased. And he had an awakening experience in his truck.
Ugh.
He's probably listening to Dolly Parton.
Is he still macrobiotic?
I don't know how strong his, you know, lifestyle or diet or macrobiotic proclivities are.
Who were his parents?
Michio Kushi.
Oh, he's a son of Michio Kushi?
He is indeed.
Get the hell out.
Isn't that strange?
Yes, that's wild. I spent my considerable time involved with that group.
Uh-huh.
Even going to Boston.
Yep.
And being a host to Michio Kushi.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Another activity with implied and promised possibilities in it.
Oh, yeah. Just another stack of Japanese lies.
Just a bunch of bullshit.
Yep.
It started out that they should only eat brown rice. People got scurvy.
Oh, yeah. Not enough vitamin C.
Oh, X-nay on that. We'll add some stuff.
Yeah, some seaweed. Yep. It's like, what's his name's new meditation course?
Who?
Frank sent me a thing. It was another commercial come on from Ken Wilber. Ken is offering this material for the first time. And a practice-oriented web course drawn from his new book, Integral Meditation. Like all Ken's work, it's psychoactive and not just philosophically mind-expanding. It helps you systematically liberate yourself from your main forms of unconscious identification with experience.
Via an online program?
I don't know. Yeah, web course. Who knows?
There's a future. This is the tease.
Yeah.
There's food for every appetite.
Yeah. The copywriters exploit the suffering naivete of Ken's audience.
How did you come to hook up with Michio Kushi's son?
Well, let's see. I think he was interviewed recently on that BatGap website interview station, and Suzanne, who loves to stumble into this stuff, stumbled across it. So I emailed the guy.
Uh-huh.
And we set up a, you know, little Zoom meeting for a week from today.
Right.
He didn't ask for any money or anything?
We didn't talk about it. I put a little donation button on the webpage.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
How many siblings does he have? I know nothing about Michio Kaku's work.
Yeah. I'm not sure. He's got a few. I think he has 6 children himself over the course of several relationships.
He has one brother that he talked about, and that brother is in Ionia in Alaska in a little macrobiotic village, or at least he's there a lot. I don't know if he lives there, but he's definitely involved in that lifestyle still.
Mm-hmm.
Would that it was that easy.
Yeah.
I'm laughing at myself.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 18 years messing with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to know what the promise was. It's always something kind of vague.
Yeah, you're always like looking for more evidence, which is just experience, and the evidence doesn't stop. It just keeps coming. You're like, I think I need a little more. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it just keeps coming. And you're like,
yeah, shit just keeps coming at you, and you're trying to qualify it.
Invalidate it, but it just keeps morphing into something else, and you're like, I need some more data.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. What becomes of a human if all we do is sit around and watch the ruse of self arise and pass away? You're kind of glued to this TV of this nonstop mirage, but you're not interested in signing up. It keeps trying to captivate you, but you're not interested in signing up. What does that leave us? We're kind of like Asian monkeys sitting in, you know, a steamy hot tub outdoors, staring into space.
Got any more of those bananas?
Yeah, really? You're just giggling at this nonstop, right, seduction into imagining that something is about something. You're like, no, it's not. It's really not. This is not about anything. It's really not. You don't have to create a unique diet that might contribute to your spiritual wellness or longevity. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, so-called sacred persons, are they not clowns?
Who get cancer and die?
I'm sorry. Father, was Jesus not a clown? You go to various ashrams where saints hung out. And wasn't Neem Karoli Baba, wasn't he a clown? You know, they'll pelt you with rocks. Rocks and peacock poo at you as they run you out of the ashram grounds. But wasn't Ramana, wasn't he kind of like a clown?
Peacocks, are peacocks vegetarian at least? I don't know about peacocks.
I think peacocks are vegetarian, yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
I've never seen a peacock tearing apart a mouse.
No, but that would be cool.
It would be cool. Oh, yeah.
Are you a meat eater if you eat insects?
I don't know. That's a good point.
No, those don't count.
Okay. Very good.
Because they're pretty much on everything, so.
I think, you know, once we turn anything into the sacred, then, you know, that presumes it has somehow graduated from its inner or innate clownness. By creating God, we make ourselves self-important.
Yeah, especially if God is a human. Or at least like a human.
If God has a book.
He's on our team.
like Ken Wilber has a book. If God has a book and a son and a Holy Spirit, or whatever other magical powers of condemnation that God has, we've just made ourselves self-important. We do that by creating God. We make ourselves self-important. Because something now is not a clown. Now, so then I have a reason to harm you physically if you laugh at my clown God. Don't laugh at my clown God, because now I will hurt you. I will take your land and lay siege upon you. Because you've laughed at my clown God. The one that I created in my own image.
It's funny because it seems like we can't like handle in some sense the, let's call it the nastier side of reality, you know, even though it's not, but just death and the rules, you know, just the really fucked up stuff. Like we can't handle it. So of course to create a God like helps with that, it's like a denial of some sort, but then we're like aggressive, we take it out aggressively, which is weird, you know what I mean? It's like strange.
Yeah, I mean, the entire spectrum of self-hypnosis is curiously self-serving, but not from a, you know, liberated point of view. Self-serving from the point of view of, you know, taking a position and then being willing to violate others, exploit and violate others.
Are we able to conceive of another activity or way of being other than that?
Well, this is what's fun. I mean, let's say you were a species. I mean, I know that's kind of a terrible accusation, but let's say you were a species and you were like, motherfucker, we are heading for extinction. God, we are beyond stupid. What could we do? Right? What could we do as a species or as a so-called aspirant or individual interested in curtailing the a collision with extinction, avoiding the collision with extinction? Yeah, what would you do? How would you be?
I don't think we get to think that. We just go over the cliff with the buffalo.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, you know, organic consequences of being as stupid as we are, gullible and violent as we are, is disappointment with, you know, extinction, or at least further exploitation and, you know, suffering, or perhaps a large depopulation event with who knows who might survive and come out on top. Yeah, I mean, it's all too strange. But the, you could say the average muggle IQ is so low.
I think it's severe denial. Not that I know anything. I don't know. I'm on a denial kick, but
mm-hmm.
It does seem like denial is a large.
Yes, it is.
They can't handle, like, no.
Yes.
It's like, you know, like your loved one's going to die. They're like, no, no. They just go into denial.
It's like, it's yeah. Involuntary, right? The denial, the call it spiritual denial of the species at large, were there one, is involuntary.
Yeah.
We are that gullible and that small-minded. We don't recognize a portal as a way of, you know, thinking or feeling or responding to consciousness that could be, liberating. We have to release ourselves and our clown god from, you know, seriousness or consequence. And the species at large, were there one, is just clearly not ready to embrace a quality of being that has no quarrel. It does not demand any kind of obedience or obeisance, and therefore does not self-justify violation and exploitation.
Not in our lifetime.
Not in our lifetime. No, I mean, you know, you have pockets and cults, of course, right? Like, you can go to a Jeannie Zandi workshop, and you think you're like, you know, of kind of a volunteer cult experience of, I don't know, being jacked open or whatever the hell it is. You know, or you could sit around with all kinds of, you know, swamis and seducers. And, you know, the message is always some kind of, liberation as a kind of a religion. Right? Look at the copy that's written by the Ken Wilber people. I mean, it's a very aggressive copy borrowing from, you know, contemporary kind of teachings that now package it in a way that you're buying, you know, a new vacuum cleaner. I mean, it's a terrible rudeness to use, let's call it, you know, potent language of non-duality or the language of disenchantment, you know, a profound disenchantment, and then use that as a lever to hook you into another drug, another consciousness drug. That is terrible what Ken Wilber is doing. Ken Wilber doesn't have the courage or the intelligence, the wherewithal or the wit to actually, you know, set aside a deep message of, you know, transmutation. Everything is made trivial. And all this ridiculous emphasis on shadow, which is what Ken Wilber is full of, you know, narcissistic, antisocial, pathological, you know, shadow, that he wants everyone to be free of what he's suffering from. And then he exploits everybody, you know, through this, all of this horrible copy. That's not what's needed, I don't think, for the species to wake up to something more fundamental than another, right, another bottle of snake oil. Fuck you, Ken, and the shadow you rode in on. Because that's not what's going on. Or the gurus that, you know, insist on, let's say, denying the, what would you call it? The, you know, the texture or the imaginary repercussions of human, of species, of sustainability, of air and water, you know, and environment and temperature, pH, and all of these incredible, you know, demonstrations of the Divine Mother's good works. You know, and so this kind of paternalism, spiritual paternalism, that is hell-bent on ignoring the play, the tapestry of, you know, human life and its challenges, is another form of, you know, denial. I mean, we don't want to get so rarefied, you know, that we can't somehow cooperate, even if it's telepathically, with, you know, the rhythms of an intelligent way for a species inhabiting the planet to, let's say, self-govern. And I also appreciate that that's a completely, you know, fabricated sentimentality or value. But I don't see that it necessarily interferes with the, you know, the adventure of liberation. Why deny? You don't have to place overemphasis on things, but they can kind of fit nicely together. You know, the movement of a species engaging in a telepathic harmonic of sustainability, which transcends the, you know, boundaries of religious superstition, of science superstition, of gender superstition, of race and color superstition. If we don't figure out how to pass through the crescendo of all of these incarcerating superstitions, then the extinction event is just around the corner.
Moments away.
Yeah, and I guess, and that's okay, that's cool, that's fine. I don't want to, you know, jump up and down and say everybody else must change or we're all going to die. Oh, well.
Winnowing may be necessary.
Winnowing. As in
winnowing,
fish?
Winnowing the species.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. Sure, why not?
What do we need 7 billion of us for?
Oh, it's just a big methane maggot farm.
It is.
7 billion. How many pounds of poop is that a day?
Oh, unbelievable.
That we flush in drinkable water. We're not that smart.
It's pretty strange. I mean, if, I don't know, it'd be hard to count how much poop that wore per day, because there's a lot of people that don't eat very much, and so they don't necessarily poop every day. And then we're overfed with, you know, sugar and hydrogenated oils.
All you do is eat and
corn.
Poop.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a giant methane maggot farm, and they all dress up and they have conventions about, you know, who should become the president of this god-awful mess. It's just another way of insisting that my God is not a clown.
Who's going to be in charge and figure out what to do with the poop?
Yeah, we will. We definitely need a poop manager. There's a lot of poop.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. You know, the amount of the harmonic of control, the harmonic of, you know, greed is still so strongly embedded in, you know, our collective consciousness that... Yeah, we don't know how to live in or with ourselves. And so we're pretty much, you know, dysfunctionally rageful all the time.
Yeah, and so really intimacy disordered, which is funny. Like, I don't know, I was just looking at like a mom with a kid or something the other day, and she just was like showering that kid with so much attention.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, we really don't need seven, I mean, this amount of people, right? Is like, why would you want this many people on a planet? Like, you know, but it's like the intimacy disorder kind of fractal. It's fun to look at like a fractal kind of, you know, you have something else, then you can place your attention on that and like keep creating more of those, these other people, you know? I don't know.
Yes. Sure. I mean, you know, we're wired for copulation and replication. Like, you know, every cell in the body is wired for that same, you know, optimization of the life spark, replication of the life spark.
Yeah, but we're kind of like cancer.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if Earth is organism and we're tilting, you know, the balance of the biosphere, then yeah, that's certainly a form of cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful privilege to take up arms and see what it's like, see if it's possible to blast through the imposition of identity, the imposition of memory. To have no God anymore. Yeah, no God anymore. But that doesn't make it atheistic. This is trans atheistic. trans faith, transhuman. And trans-atheistic. So that shifts our consciousness from being human and it shifts our consciousness from being faith-based, which means we're no longer creating religious or spiritual or secular authority. Free from inner authority means that we don't participate in the exploitation or sale of outer authority through...
You wouldn't be interested.
Through violation. Yes, that's right. There's no interest.
I would think, but...
Yeah. Yeah, too often I think people hankering for enlightenment, for call it personal release of the privacy or of their angst, of their life story, of their personal dark night of the soul. And how about fuck you? And your fucking bullshit Dark Night of the Soul, suck my whatever. You know, because then it reduces the harmonic of a telepathic, you know, process to enlightenment on the personal level. And then makes that enthralling as a release from my dark night of the soul. Who cares about you and your crappy dark night of your fucking soul? We're talking about a transmutation in consciousness that has nothing to do with the personal, with the despicable smallness of your crappy suffering. It's like, fuck you. But you see, that's a shift in the enlightenment game, to have a conversation where the adventure of realizing, the adventure of freeing oneself from all authority, is a species-friendly, right, participation. It has nothing to do with my personal enlightenment, remedying my dark night of the soul, you know, or all the bullshit that I can say I'm presently or have suffered from or am afraid of suffering from in the future. All of that shit's off the table. So Ken Wilber can go suck a peacock. Because we're not
feeding a mouse.
Tearing apart a mouse. Because we're not creating any more gods. Which means we're not creating mindfulness as a remedy for anything. From anything. It's such bullshit. But you, Ken Wilber and all those other fuckers feed on the accusation of all of that bullshit so that they can first convince you that you're suffering miserably from shadow and darkness and all of the other things that, you know, are deteriorating your consciousness. But come to me, Ken Wilber, and I will relieve you, you know, of these demons. The church is trying to has, you know, relieving people of demons, and the temple tries to relieve people of demons, and the mosque tries to relieve people of demons, and all of these fucking imaginary institutions are promising to relieve you of demons that you don't have. Because first they imbue you with these demons. Then they say, now pay us, now tithe in, and we'll release you from these demons. And so the species stays in a loop of, you know, in unconscionable stupidity, unconscionable, you know, credulity. That's what I think is fun to talk about. I mean, so why can't it be a spiritual and a secular and an atheistic and a transhuman and a transfaith benediction, which includes, you know, you could call it the crises that the apparent species is in with respect to an appointment with extinction. I mean, does that make it non-spiritual? I don't think it has to.
No.
It's too much fun. If it becomes about your or one's, you know, personal enlightenment adventure, it's too small. You're not individuated to begin with. This is just clowning around. That's what it does. It clowns around. Yeah. So that means it can, you know, it can launch one genocide after another and then, you know, overpopulate the surface of the planet with, you know, way too many fuckers and then create little curvatures in space-time or consciousness where, you know, we start cannibalizing each other. Just to keep the population down. Doesn't it seem a little bit naive to have an enlightenment conference while there's chemtrails flying overhead and make no mention of them at all? I mean, are you living in like a fucking cave or something? You want to just yabber about some kind of, you know, uber enlightenment without like looking around? I mean, it just seems somehow, you know, come like naive to me. But I'm not trying to emphasize, you know, one thing at the expense of another. It's just like, look around. Do you understand what it means to have a free media? Do you understand what it means to have three branches of government that are clearly independent of each other and have not been purchased by an oligarchy? If you don't know what that means, you are one dead fucker.
Denial.
So the denial is so profound. It's so systemic. And you see this denial even amongst so-called, you know, enlightened persons, because they're too busy selling relief from their dark night of the soul. I mean, fuck you. Or going on and on about what the self is or what it's not, and what my enjoyable and enviable symptoms are and why you should want them too. I mean, fuck you. You know, once you make this about something, like the enviable symptoms that I enjoy as a now enlightened, you know, goober. I mean, it just, again, it creates a very strange distraction. I think it's important to, you know, change up the vocabulary, change up the implication.
But have a false modesty, at least.
Yeah, at least have a false modesty, yeah. That's right. We're somehow not ready to be, you know, baboon-like. And I don't mean to insult baboons. We just keep insisting on a awkward and contrived sense of self-determinism. We're just full of self-determinism streaming out of us, you know, like poop. Willful self-determinism. Control and attention-seeking. As we're grappling with the frothing of our own cowardice, the frothing of our own delusion. We're made out of nothing, and we keep clamoring to be something, desperate to be something, when the evidence is to the contrary.
No, we just need a little more data.
Yeah, let's get more data.
Just a little more. That'll all be clear soon.
Yeah, that'll clear it right up. You know, David Bohm, the physicist who was for a time a close associate and intimate of J. Krishnamurti's, you know, had the great good fortune of blending the insights of quantum mechanics with the, you know, the wisdom teachings, the radiant presence wisdom teachings of J. Krishnamurti. And he woke up, David Bohm woke up, by piercing the presentation of ongoing ambiguity. So, you're in a stream of presently appearing, presently vibrating ambiguity. Transcendent field. Made of nothing. And Bohm was cool enough to say, yeah, we once thought that, you know, this profound ambiguity, which we see as, you know, beautiful patterns in nature, could be reduced to like atoms, right? Electrons, protons, and neutrons. He said, but on further investigation, we see that those are not stably, secularly existing. They are also made up of pattern of ambiguity, magically appearing, magically expressing ambiguity. And so Bohm woke up because he was like, oh shit, mind and all that appears in experience is can only be a contrivance because this isn't made of anything. Which is the same, you know, beautiful poetic renderings of Lhokchenpa, you know, Dzogchen master, which said the same thing. Oh yeah, mind, oh, don't mind mind. It's not made of anything. It has no implication. That's the fundamental wisdom teaching, whether it's coming out of Dzogchen, Jay Krishnamurti, David Bohm. I don't think Ken Wilber has enough intelligence to get that. He may profess to, but I think he's primarily an exploiter. Not to pick on Kenny, of course. There's a whole bunch like that. Huh. Would one still be like hot on the tail of liberation if it was pointed out to you that no, there won't be any benefits? It won't improve your life.
That's not included in the language.
Yeah. That's right. Would you still be spending all that money to hang out with Byron Katie if she told you, hey, look.
What would be the more honest pitch?
You tell me. You pitch it. I mean, the simple pitch is, look, any sense at all of arising is instantaneously an object and therefore not true. That means that what's pouring in your face nonstop is the rubric, the clown show of objects. None of it is true. Not even the slightest bit.
And so if nothing is true,
it's like, you know, you can help a friend cope with the fact that nothing is true. That you can do. That's what we do. We, you know, fuck around and playfully or sometimes agitatingly or painfully cope with the present effusion that nothing is true. That all you've really got going on here is euphoria, pretending to be something. Disembodied euphoria, pretending to be something. I don't need Byron Katie. I don't need a cockroach crawling across her naked ass. And I don't need her work. But for as long as you're a person, a suffering person, who wants to benefit from advantage seeking in your life, secularly or spiritually, then yes, you'd better run to the turnaround house. You'd better run as fast as you can to the 10-day work intensive so that you can ask yourself 4 questions and do the hokey pokey. What a ruse. I mean, I do appreciate that the species is pretty fucking stupid, and so Byron Katie, like others, can make a good living exploiting that IQ. And then hundreds, if not thousands, tens of thousands will justify it and defend it as being somehow useful, contributory. I'm like, I don't think so. You know, as long as you take yourself for something, as something that requires a remedy, you're delusional. You've made yourself up out of thin air. You think you're made out of something, like maybe atoms or shit like that. That you're consequential somehow. You'll never come to, you know, let's just call it peace. You'll never penetrate the mystery of this ongoing effusion as long as you take yourself to be something. Now you're under the influence of that effusion, and you will never find a remedy, not a lasting one. You must paint a picture of continuity of self. Paint a picture of consequence. Paint a picture of continuity, of having a future, of being able to steer or aim in a positive direction, which is other than where you take yourself to be now. And we'll ride that train to the grave. That's the lament of the species. That's the unsatisfactory nature, the dukkha of, you know, conformist reality. You could say it's a very strange person that is willing to take on the dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness of unreality, to see what might be on the other side. Because everyone else will try to convince you that life is okay just the way it is. Or wonder why you're thinking about weird shit that nobody understands.
Including yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a leg to stand on. No, nobody has a leg to stand on. Nothing is true. We're not talking about some kind of, you know, religious accomplishment, some kind of a destination, something that justifies all the suffering and all the money spent and all the urgency and all the angst and all the remedies that you've committed yourself to so that you could finally get somewhere. We really don't have a leg to stand on because all of that's just illusionary. It's just made up. You'd wish, you know, I wish I could tell the truth about something, but I can't. So, I mean, you know, I'm no expert. I'm no authority. I don't have anything to show. Thank God nothing is happening in my life at all that could make it look advantageous.
No benefits have accrued to you.
Oh, yeah. I got nothing. I got no benefits. I got no confidence in anything. Yeah. I'm not spiritual.
No confidence in anything. What's that? I was just laughing at it. I have no confidence in anything.
Hey, if shit goes south, I'm going to whimper and cry and run away just like the next person. What's the point of aiming for some kind of feigned or imaginary invulnerability within the context of a feigned or imaginary context? Who gives a fuck if you're a human with, you know, I don't know, omniscience, omnipotence,
I'm something.
Who gives a shit? That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, something like liberation or enlightenment being somehow advantageous, you know, that gives you some relief. Who cares about relief? Fuck it.
It's just like more shit to do.
Yeah, now you got to carry the burden of.
Why would you want that to do?
Yeah, that's like, yikes. I mean, we really, you know, it's like we have to unwind from all of this superstition that has been created even within the field of so-called, you know, liberation, enlightenment, Buddhism, Hinduism, Dzogchen, Kashmiri Shaivism, you know, Advaita, Vipassana, Sufism, you know. We just keep, this just keeps creating idealized and imaginary sense of space-time, you know, and a continuum of self that could somehow be bested or remedied somehow by the, you know, the spark of liberation. Jesus, what would it do for
you? Just get a little more data.
More data.
More data. Right.
Really. I think I'll have the chocolate frosted donut. And then I'll go to my, you know, then I'll teach my web-based enlightenment course. You know, these enviably famous, you know, spiritual life coach types that convince so many people of so much, you know, upliftment for a very high price. I mean, in a sense, you know, thank God for them, right? They kind of give a little kind of, you know, crescendo, a little relief, a place to go, something to believe in, something to adopt, something to get certified in, something to sell to others. It's like, oh, thank God there's something to do. You know, and they're only created by virtue of the full force of gullibility of their audience. Right? What makes Byron Katie? Byron Katie? She's nothing. What makes her is the force of gullibility of her audience. Right? The power of attention, the power of wealth. Right? The power of celebrity. Who created Hitler? Did he do it? No, everyone joined in.
Who created everybody though? That everyone that joined in.
Yeah, well then, you know, that's fun. That's metaphysical. You know, who knows? This does that.
This does everything.
Yeah, why
this
not?
This does.
Yeah. Yep.
But when you talk about the teachers and the Byron Katie's and all that stuff, you talk about them like they're, you know, like they're real entities that are going out to do this for...
I'm addressing the phenomena.
I mean, it's just all part of the process. Whatever the if there is a process, then that's just all part of the process. It's part of the evolution.
Yeah, no question about it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Where is evolution going?
Well, who knows? I mean, we could look at it from two points, that there is no such thing. I mean, if you look at it from the point of there's no truth and there's nothing happening, of course, there's no evolution. But if we're going to talk in a timeline about evolution, as we did a little last week, then anything that's happening is part of that evolution.
The term suggests that there is... an alteration that makes sense.
Nothing has to make sense, but it seems like there's some, you know, if you look at things in a pattern perspective, the way in evolution, the way things, you know, have grown into what we call humans and whatever. And like we talked about last week, if this species is going to survive, then it either has to evolve into maybe a more, you know, more awakened beings that are not going after the power and all that stuff to fulfill themselves. And then the Byron Katie and all that stuff is maybe the beginning of the process, and a sloppy beginning maybe, but maybe that's, you know, when things start to evolve or change, I don't think things happen, you know, they probably don't happen in a pretty way, you know.
You can create the you know, the pleasantry of a timeline or a chronology that looks like evolution, right? That of course includes a species coming out of primordial ooze and then, you know, heading for its own choking extinction. Yeah, I mean, those are fun perspectives. And of course, everything within the context of a movement of consciousness from primitive to more complex and then self-annihilating complex forms, you know, that's playful. That's cool.
But it's also like evolution and dreaming are like synonymous. Like they, you know what I mean? It's just stitching. We're just stitching shit together. And that just seems to be like dreaming, you know? It's just,
Yeah, that's the yoga. The yoga is to see, oh wow, look, this keeps hoping to convince me of something.
Yeah, it's like, here, look, a big dinosaur bone. Look, dinosaurs. You're like, oh, we could put these together and then put them in a museum and
yeah,
give them teeth.
Yeah, someday they'll find John Travolta inside of amber.
Right, but earlier when I first turned on, you know, you were talking about, you were like heavy into the thing where, you know, people that are just looking for their own awakefulness or enlightenment,
yeah,
are have the head in the sand. They're not seeing what's going on in the real world. Is that what you're talking about? Well, so right there, you just jumped into you know, into illusion, which is fine, because I mean that's, you know, that's a way to go too, because one is not. I mean, either one is not true. I mean, if we can say it, it's not true. Isn't that true? Isn't that true that if you can say it is not true, which means that what I just said is not true also?
Well, I don't have the capacity to be logical.
But you sounded very... Like you sounded like you were very convinced that you were being logical.
Well,
talking about
you may have.
That's part of the clown show.
That's part of the clown show.
All right.
That's right.
Whenever you talk about Byron Katie, whenever you talk about Ken, whenever you talk about any of that stuff, you're back in the illusion and sounding. You almost sound like pissed off or jealous almost, you know, like these guys.
Well, you know, you have to, I mean, you can't know where I am, right? You can only report on where the stuff that's being spoken about and in the way that it's being spoken about lands in you.
That's true.
Yeah.
The only way we can have a conversation is if we all, you know, report back on how it's being interpreted by ourselves.
That's one way.
Oh, we can just just listen, I guess.
Well, you know, the fun of skipping topics or bouncing around or being, you know, provocative just to shake a tree will, you know, elicit something in the listener. And you could say the fun is like, permit what it is that is elicited or solicited in your own consciousness to become just another part of the, you know, the flow of the clown show. Because I'm not insisting on the things that I say or the fun that I may make or the anger it may sound like or the envy that it may sound like. We're just plucking shit out of the ether for the fun of, you know, mellifluous evocation. which is the clown show.
That does seem, it seems different than like a, I don't know, it seems like the normal way of communicating is like someone says something and then I try to filter it through me, through like, how does this relate to me? How can I relate it to some experience I've had in the past or hope to have in the future? And then I respond via that filter and it's like, just remains narcissistically kind of on each side.
Yeah. That's right. That's what we're playing around with is the, you know, we can watch how subtly this effusion gets entwined, becomes entwined with belief or value system. And the reason it's fun to take pot shots at, you know, the Byron Katies of the world is to just reveal how gullible we are. How this curious sense of becoming solidifies for us, you know, the nature of a body, a person, a history of suffering that so desperately wants, you know, relief from our own neuroticism, and how those kinds of, you know, teaching schools and methodologies, I can suggest, perhaps are more exploitive than they are helpful. Because you just remain within, you know, the context or content of another dream field, like the work. Or Zog Chen is a dream field. Or Kashmiri Shaivism, depending on how it's practiced, is a dream field. Or Buddhist jhanic practice, Anapanasati, as another dream field. And that's how we create gods. That's how we make sure everyone knows that our God is not a clown. So now I can violate you because my God is not a clown. Now, that's the same thing going on with Peter Brown. You know, not necessarily intentionally, or not that it's intentional with anyone, but because we're human, whatever that is, and we're clamoring around a body of teachings or a certain kind of vocabulary to, let's say, penetrate the mystery of, you know, reality or consciousness, we can't help but to say, oh, my guru is not a clown. But he is. She is. They are. By creating, you know, the superstition, the force of belief in the ramifications of radiant presence, or whatever other vocabulary gets thrown at us, you can see that we just instantly jump on it as if, oh, it's saying something, as if it's real. Oh, it's discernible, it's observable, it's experiential. And I can benefit, you know, by going through the fire of that thing so that I can enjoy some kind of liberation when I come out on the other side. This is a form of hysteria.
We're very intense researchers.
Very intense.
Must get more data.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we're not going to reduce it to some kind of logic or some kind of sentiment. It's just, you know, trans faith, trans Gnostic, trans agnostic, trans atheistic, trans human. It's just always like, whoa. You know, the magical power or the admonition or the good suggestion for even to do noticing, right, within the body and bounty of Peter Brown's work is a vehicle. It's a vehicle. It helps. It's like Don Juan gave Carlos peyote to shake him out of his stupid tree, to show him that there was other shit going on here than his stupid tree. Then Don Juan later educated Carlos that it wasn't about peyote, that was just used to get you out of your stupid tree. Now we can start doing the training on radiant presence. And even all of that was a vehicle.
Right, but if you're going to say that, then obviously everything's vehicles. Going to the bar and getting shit faced is a vehicle. I mean, if Mm-hmm. If this has a process and it's going through it, then that must be the process.
Mm.
Whatever is happening to you.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah.
But we don't know. We don't know what the fuck is going on. And we don't know, like, you know, we don't know anything. I mean, we don't know that we don't know.
Yep.
That's inherent in the use of language. The wrong tool.
It's really strange to be perfectly intimate with absolute inclusivity. And I meant that inclusivity and non-conclusoriness. Yes. Inconclusive, right? Inconclusivity. Yeah, this is streaming inconclusivity. Streaming inclusive inconclusivity.
Trying to be described by language.
Yes, trying to be reduced to, you know, yes, right.
But language is conclusively.
Yes, it's
true. Because language, in order to even understand it, you have to conclude a word means something.
Yes, that's the clown show. That's how
we have. If we have any hope at all, it's that you will never conclude anything again.
Yes.
Right. Seriously, isn't that what enlightenment is?
Yes, seriously.
No more conclusions ever.
Euphoric inconclusivity.
Yep.
Right, that's Gaiac mind.
Yeah, that goal, but unfortunately, goals are conclusive, so the only thing that can happen is maybe it'll burn out by itself.
Well,
a conclusive machine.
Yeah, I mean, once you start reporting on it, right?
Right. But whose fault? You know, whose fault is it that we report on it? Like who's like?
There's no question of fault.
Who's?
There's no who's. There's no who's. There's just the witnessing that this reports on itself.
This thing likes to report on itself? It does, yeah. Or it doesn't.
Yeah, that's it. Just appears as if it can and does report on itself. The reporting on itself might lead some to conclusivity and others to inconclusivity.
Neither one matters.
No.
No. Inconclusively feels better, gotta admit. But I just reported on it, so.
Well, that's a fun reflection. You know, I mean, does people hanging out with Peter Brown for his good looks? You know, or the scintillating nature of his, you know, garbled teachings? No, if they're hanging out at all, it's because something is communicated or transmitted as a feeling tone. Right? Something that grabs you by the short and curlies and won't let you go, and you say, holy shit, what the fuck is this vibration about?
Which you told me didn't even exist today, but let's...
Well, the thing is that you know, anything that intoxicates us,
yeah,
even if it's the, you know, undeniable force field of, you know, let's say a realized master, regardless of gender, right? That's just, it's enthralling. It's part, again, it's like Bruce was saying, that's part of the process. You know, that's part of the entrainment, is to have your ass handed to you by a vibratory field, like peyote, that shakes you out of your shit tree. But it's not a destination. That's the problem. A lot of people go back to Shakti, Shakti environments, as if it were a destination. But it's really just another part of the clown show that, you know, wakes us up or shakes us out of our shit tree so that we can discover whatever there is to discover for ourselves. We are, you know, we are compelled by feeling tone, because all sensation and all emotivity and all belief or superstitious idolatry results in a certain feeling tone. And, you know, becoming acquainted with the feeling tone of inconclusive inclusivity is, like Bruce said, you know, it feels nice. It's interesting. It's a very different texture of being than, you know, doing a right-hand salute to Don Trump. Even though that has an enthralling, right, serotonin aspect as well.
We could end our Zooms with that, what do you think?
Yeah, we could all buy pinwheels and spin them on camera. Yeah. Freedom from becoming is on tap. It's not a remediation. Yeah, you know, it can be felt, you know, in a kind of a golden manner. It has a it has a soma aspect to it, right? A mind that has been cluttered by ideas and superstition and belief that discovers a deep relaxation, inconclusivity, that has a soma. I mean, the jhanic practices of the Buddhist arhants is dripping with soma, the deconstruction of mind and objects and space and time through the euphoric subtlety, the euphoric intimacy of anapanasati, or, you know, breath mindfulness, is a soma. And that soma, well, that's synonymous with stream entry and liberation. Right? Radiant presence awakening to itself. You know, it's like taking the risk to be immersed as being or soma, and not falling prey to the imagination of self, the objectification of self.
Don't bite the apple.
As long as we're interested in some kind of future peace, we've figured out how to wrangle or wiggle free of present intimacy. I can invest in future peace, which means now I can defer what's present. So I'm still alive and well to work on myself. And Katie will help me. Help me work on myself. Ram Dass will help me work on myself. I can polish my heart. Any questions?
I think I got it.
God. We're all silenced.
I think I need a little more data before I can formulate a question.
Yeah, go get some data.
Google it.
That's right.
I'd have to send out my probes.
Yeah. Some strange way presence self-immerses. As presence self-immerses, it interferes with the reflex to create self. You know, but we have to get used to it. We'd like to think that some kind of crescendo-like enlightenment event will occur and I'll be good to go. But maybe it doesn't work quite that way. Maybe you get deeper and deeper glimpses of a quality of immersion, self-immersion that doesn't create self. And you have to get used to it. You have to be willing to inhabit yourself or your present experience, you know, completely inconclusively. You have to be able to handle the euphoria that is going to arise. And not, you know, shy away from it or defer. I mean, you know, what the church lets you do is sin and be forgiven. That's all you're allowed to do, is sin and be forgiven. You are not allowed to immerse in the benediction of your own euphoria. You're not allowed to become Christ. You're only allowed to sin and be forgiven. Well, fuck you. And the culture works the same way, right? Sin and go to jail, especially, or sin and be homicided on the street if you're the wrong color.
In a way, the New Agey thing was just making me, when you said that, I just envisioned going to confession, unfortunately. And, but like, you know, you go in this little box and you tell them all your things you feel bad about and you're forgiven. It's kind of like the same as going to like Byron Katie. And,
yes.
Your worksheet.
It is the same. Byron Katie is a giant
confession. Go do 10 Hail Marys and your worksheet and you'll be good.
Yes, that's right.
Get my worksheet.
Byron Katie and her ilk are just a large confessional for a Judeo-Christian culture that's gone insane.
What do you expect when they put children in boxes and make them confess all their sins?
Yeah, really, it starts young. I didn't do anything, Fada.
Come on, let's be honest.
What's wrong with my weenie?
Yeah, really, really. I can't touch myself, Fada.
Go say 5 Hail Marys.
Yeah, really? You're not going to get permission from anybody to do this. You're on your own. Your presence, the maturation, the insightfulness, the subtlety of that presence, immersing in that presence, lying, resting in it so as not to trigger the default of self. You have to do that alone. I mean, you can have friends, talk with friends, sit in large meditation groups, you know, go to turnaround houses and all kinds of events, get blessed by the Pope, you know, in a throng of millions, or get blessed by the Dalai Lama, you know, in a similar. But that's not going to help. And don't expect any perfection either. I mean, it's okay to suck at this.
Just thinking about the Pope is just kind of funny, but yeah.
Really, the bestower of gigantic blessings.
Yeah. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, and still, you know, millions and millions of people are moved by it, and you know, the force of it is probably capable of all kinds of miracle. But, yeah, well, what else you got? Your God is still a clown. I mean, look at the clothes that they wear. Aren't they saying, hey, look, this is really just a clown troupe? Me and the cardinals and the bishops, it's just a clown troupe.
Yeah, they need to have them come out of a really small car.
Yeah, really, hundreds of them come out of a tiny car.
It still wouldn't matter.
With their big hats.
Their big hats.
It wouldn't matter. That wouldn't change anything.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Tibetan guys, you know, with the red and yellow stuff, with the big hats and the robes. You look like you want to put a red nose on them.
Yeah.
Honk, honk.
True.
Wow. Well, we've beat this to death. It's after 9 o'clock. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's almost as fun as driving a Zamboni. I think driving a Zamboni is more fun.
Those are the things on the ice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Polishing ice.
Polishing ice. Polish this, Ram Dass.
Right.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Take it easy, guys.
Next week, come on for Norio.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.